I can't help thinking, somewhere in the universe, there has to be something better than man. There has to be. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ascension to 10.
Just one round that
we're
time.
Back.
We're back.
Here we are. We made it. We made it two in a row. So that's we're progress.
Part two is on a good stretch, good footing here.
Part two, number two.
Part two, number two.
Of season one.
Season one. We'll let you know when season two drops.
And we'll prepare for that. Yeah. Or not. We just might spring that on you. Who knows?
Yeah, but I guess if we see shirtless pics of us after a fat face challenge, you'll know that season two has dropped.
It's happening. Oh my God, it's happening. Uh-huh. Yeah. All right, man.
So what's popping, baby?
Not much. It's just been just another week.
Yeah. All right.
Awesome. I'm actually really excited. I'm just really excited to talk about the movie that we did this week. I watched it last night, and so we're recording the next day, and it's
fresh.
So much to get into.
Yeah.
But there is a story I wanted to tell before we get into that, and I think you might have something too. But a few episodes we talked about when you used to be a Nielsen family. Like we talked about it with your mom and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember it was one summer. It was like Nielsen did the, we'll give you, here's $3, like record what you've been watching and stuff.
Yeah.
And I decided to take it upon myself. Back then I used to get like a half day during the week off. So then I was like just watching TV and I was like, I obviously am a perfect demographic for this. And I never watched like TV during the middle of the day. So I was like, what am I going to watch? So one of the things I started watching was Esquire Network. Back then it was like, you know, the channel for guys with like cool stuff. And there was like Baron Davis, the old basketball player, had a show and it's all about fashion and stuff. Mm. And he's like, hey, I'm Baron Davis. We're going to check out this cool stuff. And it was like, you know, all these other guys like showing off their new fashion and stuff. Right. But the other thing that I was watching was Tanked. I don't know if you've ever seen this show on the Animal Planet. It's literally just a show about a guy that does water tanks for fish. And he goes to people's houses and installs them.
Epic.
Yeah. So I filled that out. So I literally filled out a day of watching Esquire Network and Tanked. I submitted it to Nielsen.
You took the $3 and actually gave him back.
I took $3. I
content,
did right. the work, man.
So and when was this?
2016, 2015. Whenever Esquire was still around. Wow. But it led to we went out with friends like a couple of days after that. And people were just talking and like having a normal conversation. And then I jumped in with, anybody ever watched Tanked? Dead silence. And everyone just looks at me like, what the fuck is Tanked? I literally watched like one episode and I brought it up like I was some expert of it. And everyone just, my wife still to this day doesn't let me live it down. Like, anybody watch Tanked lately? So
that's awesome. Just crickets, huh?
Funny thing. Yeah. Yeah. So that was just a little story I was thinking of. I don't know what it was this week, but.
Well, that's funny because I feel like the data that they collected from you on that one afternoon was probably as useful as what my family fed Nielsen for like 15 years because it was, we were supposed to punch in with our numbers what user was watching what, right? And if all the people
that stupid box would just flash at you,
flash because constantly the thing flashing. Was if you it had timers on it, I think. So if you like, let's say one person was watching if the TV was on for I don't know a long time, it would flash at you to say, "Hey, are you still watching? Or is someone else here? Or don't forget to add anybody that came in the room." And if you if you were to leave the room to go to the bathroom, you were supposed to punch out. And then, but if nobody was watching the TV, so if you were the only person watching, you're like, "Oh, I got to go to the bathroom. Let me log out of the TV real quick." But if you kept it on, it would then just flash, right? There would be, it couldn't comprehend if the TV was just on and nobody watching it. Like there was, it wasn't possible for the data to function in that format.
That's awesome.
So our family got my family got to the point where it was just like, who cares about this? And we were just flashing constantly because we didn't punch in. So I think they got as useful a data as you as us. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was just like I've never watched those shows again. like it was just like that afternoon. I was like, "Oh, the Nielsen, like, let's see what we can watch." And it was like just the stupidest two shows.
Maybe we should do a special episode where we watch a season of Tanked and then give a review.
We're not gonna do that.
Give a Nielsen rating.
You know what? That you just
we're not just doing
reminded.
That.
We're not doing that. And it reminded me, how is our Formula One race vlog going? You can't say.
Oh my god, you put that on me, man. So if you've forgotten, we went to a Formula One race in October, and we like captured the whole, documented the whole thing, and I've been,
I don't know, we should just put it on the socials and that would have been it.
I know, right? I've been sitting on this footage like, no, I'm gonna get it done. Don't worry, I'm gonna put a whole vlog together and put it on the YouTube channel.
Dude, it's gonna be epic.
That is in the works. It's on the to-do list. That's next up.
TBD. Yeah, season two. Season two content.
It will come out next year. I'll hype up next year's Coda race, or when it's relevant again.
Share last year's content because we're probably not going this year.
So yeah, thanks That's for bringing awesome. That up.
Yeah, no problem. Well, you made me think of that because we have a Google Drive that we use, and that popped up like one of the files was Coda. Just made me laugh.
Oh yeah, yes,
no, it's fine. It's all good.
Yeah.
So
I forgot to share the story last week, and it's an update on. It's a quick update on my neighborhood siding project. Now,
it's been a while.
If listeners recall, last summer when we were recording the Top Gun episode, the people that were redoing the siding for our HOA just had to come in the back door that day and paint the door while we were recording. So, and that was part of this huge siding project. And part of that was they ripped up all our screens and stuff and they still haven't been replaced. And then we came home one day and the entire house worth of siding was just in our driveway and up our door and sidewalk and stuff. They just it didn't pick it up. So part of the carnage that happened during that time was basically every single cable line so there's above ground wires, right? There's power and stuff throughout our whole neighborhood. Right. Part of those wires are the cable and internet stuff from the various services over the years. And so a lot of these houses had dishes on them. And so they still had I don't know what, or like other cable modem or whatever, a bunch of ancestral lines to the houses that don't function anymore. And they were just tearing those suckers out because like if it wasn't electrocuting them, they didn't care basically. And so across the street from us, there was this house, and there was this, I guess, a cable, like coax type cable, was just hanging down from the overhead power lines into their yard since July, right? We're recording this in May. So this was last July. This cord has just been hanging down, and it was hanging down in the middle of that driveway. So, but it was long enough for the people to just kind of put a rock over top of it and angle it into the ditch. And that's the way it's been this whole time. last week when we recorded,
that's one way to do it, I guess.
Earlier that day, we were hanging out, and about 6 p.m. or so, we hear a smoke alarm go off, and we heard it close enough to us. And so all these houses in our development are duplexes. And so the fact that we could hear it so clearly, we thought it was our neighbor's house. Smoke alarm was on for a minute or less, right? So they burned something over there. And I'm not exaggerating at all. 5 minutes later, we hear a fire engine from up the road, and we're like, this seems a little too coincidental. So we go out, and we could hear the fire truck approaching our circle area.
Yeah.
And it's this motherfucker is just and I'm like, oh shit. What's going on?
Like, there's
here?
People in the way in the neighborhood.
Well, everyone's coming out. Yeah, like he's bulldozing people, you know, like just running get over out. People like death race and stuff, right?
Right.
And so we get out because it's getting louder, it's getting closer and stuff. And I'm holding Sloan at this point, and we go out onto just our front porch, and the fire truck's right fucking there, right in front of our house. And it stopped because there were two cars on either side of the road, you know, the place that you're not supposed to fucking park. Like, we got a ticket and nobody else is getting these fucking tickets, right? For parking in the street.
Right.
And this guy he sees all the people standing around, right? I assume. And I'm out there holding a baby, right? And this guy like blares on this horn. Nuclear siren goes off, right? It's a nuclear Chernobyl reactor meltdown.
Right.
What this guy's sense of urgency was for blasting this horn. And immediately, I mean, I like go back inside really quickly because it was crazy loud, right? And I was worried about her ears and stuff. And it made me think of this movie, like Mr. Holland's Opus or something.
I was just going to say that's Mr. Holland's Opus.
Now, I haven't seen that movie in 25 years, right?
Yeah.
And the only scene I can remember from that movie is when the flashback of him as a kid in the parade, right? And the sirens go off and he goes deaf.
Oh, yeah,
right?
His son. Yep.
Or it's his son. Okay. So that's immediately what I thought of. You know, and one part of my brain instantly went to she's deaf. And so obviously I didn't really think that, but you know, that's kind of where I went. So in the meantime, we're like, what's going on? I don't see smoke. Is our neighbor's house on fire because of the smoke alarm? And, you know, what's going on here? So this guy's blaring on the horn, and then our neighbor across the street comes out and moves his truck and stuff. So then the fire truck has this clear path, right? And he's like, and he goes one house down, and they all pile out of there. And we're like, this was not the house that was just had a smoke alarm, right? It's now past us. And I see them get out of the truck, and they're on t-shirts and shorts. And one homie comes out with like some garden shears and snips that cable that was hanging down in the fucking driveway from across the street that's been there for almost a year. And they snip that thing, roll it up, and fucking leave.
What?
And at this point, I was standing outside I put Sloan inside, and then I was standing outside and talking to one set of neighbors, and then my neighbor across, or neighbor next door, who had the smoke alarm, she came out and asked her, "Wait, was your smoke alarm just going off?" And she said, "Yeah, I wasn't sure if this was for me or not." And I said, "No, they just cut that wire and left." Everyone was standing around like, "What's going on? This has been here for a year. What is, what happened that they needed to get this right now?"
Why did the fire department show up? Good Lord.
So anyways, it was just, it's just so random, these random things that happen. The smoke alarm and the fire truck showing up immediately.
Yeah.
For a cable. And the, just the blaring the horns and stuff. And it's like,
good grief.
What's going on here? So I thought that was funny last week. And then I forgot to tell about it because I remember
that's
the
Avicii
story.
Yeah, that's a good story too. No, that was so, that's some good stuff.
So I don't know what's next with this whole saga of getting new siding and stuff, but
so like the cable wasn't connected to the house in any way, so it's just dangling from a like a overhead.
Yeah, it was part of the power line
to a house
bundle of stuff, other stuff like legacy cable things, I guess.
Wow. Yeah. All right. All right.
So
all
I don't know what happened there, but it was pretty funny.
Well. That's pretty crazy. Yeah. Let's see. Can't think of anything else other than, should we talk about this movie?
Let's do it.
All right. So the movie we watched, Street Fighter last week, and this week we watched The Quest, which isn't technically sci-fi, but I don't know. Some elements are pretty sci-fi-ish in the fact that just some logistical things. But this was Jean-Claude Van Damme's directorial debut, and he got Roger Moore signed up for it to be like the one of the lead characters. Yep. And all I can say, Jad, is this is just a dumb man's Mortal Kombat.
I think that it was, I don't know if this is a correct term of, it's probably not a correct use of irony, but this was more of a Street Fighter movie than last week's movie.
Yes, it was.
And
yeah, it was.
There was,
it was
absolutely zero element of a quest involved in this story.
This
was
name.
Like a sliding Lord. Shift, a sliding scale of just loose stories with titles that don't make any sense, right?
Yeah,
this was a Street Fighter type movie. And last week I guess you could call that a quest because they went up the river, right, and found the pyramid
quest.
And stuff.
Yeah they used, I mean, they used the stealth boat, they got to the bad guy, and then they all posed at the end. Like, it was very,
this okay,
an epic quest.
This, to summarize the whole thing, and I don't mean to take away from Spenny's synopsis, but to give you a sense of what this quest was, it was Jean-Claude trying to get home from a voyage he didn't intentionally try to be on, and right. A lot of quests you end up where you started from, right?
Right.
But
right.
That's usually through a narrative where you then realize that you had it good where you were, right? It was, you didn't need to go anywhere, or the journey to get you back home was what you needed to experience. This right. man didn't want to be anywhere else but home.
Right.
And he, like, I don't know. It was.
Well, let me do this, okay. My version okay. of the synopsis, and then we'll just go through it, because, I mean, the beginning of this whole thing is just
beginning and end. Ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Jean-Claude Van Damme plays a clown on stilts trying to help orphan kids by teaching them how to steal money. Suddenly, he gets knocked out and ends up on a boat as a slave. He gets carried to an island where he learns Muay Thai after being sold by a dishonorably discharged captain of the British Royal Navy, played by Roger Moore. Some Tibetan emperor decides to throw his version of a Mortal Kombat tournament in a lost city and sends rogue priests all over the world to invite the top fighters. Jean-Claude isn't selected, but he takes some other guy's spot because why not? Eventually, he wins the tournament. He gives up the one thing he wanted, a giant golden dragon, and ends up as an old man drinking coffee at a pub.
I was just going to skip to the end real quick. His last word as his last line basically is, I think his literal last line is, "And we did all right." Yeah. Or, I made it back home and we did all right.
We did all right.
And that can be something said when, ironically, when you like fucking make it, right? Yeah, we did all
right. Right. Yeah.
But I think what he meant was they literally just scraped by. He makes it back home and they barely make ends meet. They did okay.
Yeah, but
when
so
he got back home.
So was part of the tournament that you win a giant golden dragon? Was that actually like the prize?
I think so. And
he's never specified, but all of a sudden he just is like. At the end, this Roger Moore character is basically he's in a blimp, a German blimp. He and his little secondhand stooge are trying to steal this dragon, and apparently, you know, everyone in the Lost City is watching the battle, the fight. Yep. And then all of a sudden, they all come out and they just start shooting their crossbows at the blimp, and it comes crashing down. And then Jean-Claude's like, you know, they're like, the emperor's like, well, you know, they're trying to steal the dragon, so we have to kill him. And Jean-Claude's like, I don't want the dragon. I'll take their lives if I win. Like, sacrifice them. You can keep the dragon. And he's like,
all right.
Okay, sure.
We do this thing once every millennia or something. You know that, right?
So, like, Jean-Claude wins the whole tournament, and then he goes home with nothing.
He goes home with nothing. That's the point. They go home and barely scrape by. It's literally where he started from. He's learned nothing. He learned nothing and didn't get rich in the process.
there's a journalist that's with him on this entire quest, and, like, she wrote a book about it and made all this money. And
he got a copy. Okay.
Holy smokes.
Okay, so the movie starts and ends with Jean-Claude as like an 80-year-old walking into a bar. Right?
Yeah.
And the makeup is like, we could do a better job making ourselves look old, I think, right?
I think our high school plays we did better when we did our own makeup.
And and so he walks up to the bar. Nobody's in there. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning, right?
Nobody's in there. As always, bartender just cleaning.
Yep, just wiping the table, right? He walks in. Bartender says, "Hey, you from around here?" And he goes, "I used to be." That's literally what that means.
You from around here?
If you're from around there, this yes. It doesn't matter when, right?
Yeah.
And so he says nothing other than that. And the guy
he's
says,
like, "Do you want?" The guy's like, "Do you want a drink?" He's like, "Coffee." And then, you know, like 10 seconds later, he's like, "Put some whiskey in it."
I'll put
but
some
this
whiskey.
Guy, but the just the audacity of Jean-Claude. No one's in this bar, right? He pours the cup of coffee and the motherfucker walks across the entire room.
No, no, no.
What?
Yeah, okay, so he has the coffee pot. He's about to pour it, right?
Yeah.
The cup's sitting in front of him, in front of Jean-Claude, and the guy behind the bar is about to pour the coffee. He sets it back down and says, I'll give you something a little extra. And Jean-Claude's like, okay, I've literally not asked for a single thing yet. And the bartender says, why don't you go make yourself at home? I'll bring it to you. What's the order of operations for making an Irish coffee, right? You pour the coffee and then you pour some whiskey in it, right? So he could have poured the coffee right there and then just done a splash of whiskey. But yeah, then Jean-Claude walks across the room, right?
Yeah, and he can barely walk. Asked for so nothing
at this point.
That's why I'm like, the whole scene doesn't make sense, because if you're old and you can barely, like, he has a cane, so he can't walk very well. You would think you'd just walk up to the bar and sit.
Yep.
Like, there's no reason to go back. That's why she was just, it's just a weird thing. I don't know.
And so three thugs come in and try and rob the place, and Jean-Claude, you know, kills them all basically with his cane. And,
yo, what's up, old man?
And I guess that triggers a flashback of this whole quest, right? And so
Is this the part where it triggers back to when he was a kid and that lady sitting next to him?
I think that's later. I think the next scene is the 1920s, and he is...
Oh, yeah, 1925, back to Tibet.
No, New York, right?
New York.
New York. Okay, so the next
time... No, it starts in Tibet. It's in Tibet. Oh, the guy... The emperor gives... The emperor gives out all these scrolls, and then all of a sudden you're in Germany.
Yeah.
And then one of these Tibetan guys is walking... To hand a fencer a sword, scroll, and then you're in New York, and
because now the invitations are being sent out across the globe for the country, each country, and that's important later. The country's best fighters, right?
Except two of them. There's two of them. One is Okinawa, which is a city, and the other one's Africa. Which is
So the next time you see Jean-Claude is a close up, like a crash zoom of a fucking clown makeup.
He's in clown makeup. I didn't even know who it was. I was like, who is this guy?
Gigantic cat.
Shit, it's Jean-Claude.
And then he stands up and he's on stilts. And he's stilting around 1920s New York with the clown makeup, and he's juggling bowling pins or something, right?
Yeah.
And all in an elaborate plot. So this thing was planned to the minute, right? Because this one local rich guy comes zooming up in a Studebaker or whatever, and he's like, Delbois or whatever. Why don't you, stop fucking around with the makeup and shit and, you know... why don't you put your talents to use? You could make a lot of money. Right. And he's like, nah, man, I'm good. And so I guess so Jean-Claude has these kids scattered around the area. And so this is how it plays out. But what was his actual plan? Because he stands up, starts juggling some bowling pins. Police come out of nowhere and say, knock this shit off, Dubois. They try to arrest him. Jean-Claude starts beating the shit out of all these cops with his stilts. Then he escapes. And the kids steal that rich guy's money. Empty bag, right?
An empty bag that apparently has cash in it.
Yeah.
That, you know, unbeknownst to us.
But
it was funny. It was funny because he's the distraction and then these kids, but it's like the voiceovers, like through a lot of this is like, he was all worried about the kids and making sure the kids are okay. And it's like, you're just making them thieves.
Yeah.
You're just, it's not like, it wasn't like you were teaching him anything or feeding him. It was just like,
I know. Because then they make the score, right? And then it's Dubois with that fucking clown makeup, and he's like looking at these $1 bills, and he's like, "Oh, we're rich, you know." And
go get us some real food.
And then these gangsters plow into their
a classic Van Damme, right?
Obvious.
I'm surprised they didn't have rockets on the truck. Well, it's the exact same.
As good as, because they were just laying out Tommy gun in
fire
at
these kids. They're shooting kids.
Just,
I didn't think you could do
just
that.
Just mowing them down, right? And in this warehouse that I guess everybody knew where he was, right?
Yeah.
This secret lair is just next to some boats. And so one of them dies or something, and he the cops are coming because I guess literally everybody knows where Dubois lives and his banger rat kids and stuff. And
the kid's like, they're gonna think it's you, so you gotta get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, run, Dubois.
And so he just does the elaborate escape on some nets and stuff, and then loses his grip and he just wakes up on a pirate ship or something. I don't know.
There, he's on like a grain conveyor belt, and there is just like a roped thing from a crane being pulled over to a boat, and he just hangs from it, and he's just hanging, like all lights are on him, the police are all underneath him, nobody sees him, and then he lets go and falls into the boat and gets knocked out.
Yep.
And the second he wakes up, which I don't understand how no one noticed him until he woke up.
Just in the middle of the cargo hold, right? Which I guess they needed someone to move those bags around literally all day, every day, right? That was his job when he woke up.
Why did he keep having to move them around?
He had to move the sacks around.
He was just moving them back and forth.
Not to mention, okay.
He's in chains, too. I didn't understand the chains.
He's in chains? Where's he going to go? Right?
Yeah.
And
you're in the middle of the ocean.
Okay. They start in New York and their destination is Thailand or
Thailand.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
They're on a fishing boat.
Yeah.
Where do they go? I don't know. I mean,
it's a long journey. That's all I know.
Yeah. So I don't know. They, but then,
Roger Moore is firing cannons on this stupid ship, and there's a giant shootout, and then Jean-Claude just starts kicking the crap out of the people on the boat, and Roger Moore's like, oh,
that's the best fighter I've ever seen.
This is the best fighter I've ever seen. I watched him for 5 seconds hit two people
from the back, like, right.
I gotta get this. This guy's gotta go.
He's gonna be my this is how I sell my rusty guns.
I'm going to send him to Muay Thai Island, where all they do is Muay Thai.
Perfect bargaining chip. Now, so Roger Moore is basically a pirate. He steals stuff, and he is this shady, just kind of crappy salesman. And he presents himself as this lord, but really he's this disgraced kind of Navy officer and stuff that just is scamming. He's a scam artist in the 20s.
Yeah.
In Asia.
Yep. He and he also has a sidekick.
Yeah.
What's that guy's name? Harry. Harry Smithy. Which fun little tidbit about that guy. His name's Jack McGee in real life.
That's a real name.
You've seen him in others. That's his real name.
Jack McGee.
Jack McGee. One of the notes that I found on the movie was that Jack McGee broke wind after each take. This drew the ire of Jean-Claude Van Damme, who wasn't amused, but the rest of the cast and crew especially didn't enjoy it.
So that's awesome.
There's not a lot of tidbits, but that was one of them.
That's awesome.
But it's just like Jean-Claude is left on this island and he thinks he's going back to America because Roger Moore's like, oh, yeah, you'll go back in 2 weeks.
Yep.
And then he ends up being stuck on this island for like 6 months.
Yeah.
And
again, just carrying stuff around, just carrying sacks around.
Yeah, it's like a Karate Kid thing where like he's just observing all these people fighting, but he's just cleaning, like he's scrubbing the floors and stuff. And then just one day he
decides to fight,
kicks the crap out of everybody.
Yep.
But then it flashes, to 6 months past, and then they're in Bangkok, and here's Roger Moore again. you know, hanging out with Smitty or whatever his name is, and they just happen to stumble upon another Muay Thai fight, and then there's John Claude, and they're like, oh crap, we got to get out of here because we sold him and we don't want to be in trouble. And then John Claude's like, you owe me, I want the Golden Dragon.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, all right, let's get it.
What's that? But yeah.
Sure.
So, yeah.
So the plan is devised is there's a boxer from New York who got one of these scrolls. They have this lady who is a journalist with them. She somehow knows he's coming to Bangkok to do the fight. So they're just going to act like they're all part of his security and
escort,
whatever.
Like they're going to escort him there
and document all the stuff that's going on. And so they,
okay. So part of this problem that they have is that they don't know where it is, right? All the invitations that the hand delivered invitations from across the globe have this vague map on it, on the back of it. And then that's the location of this hidden city or forgotten city or something.
Right.
And up until this point, Roger Moore has never heard of this competition, right? He has no idea what it's called. All he knows is that there's a golden dragon.
Yep.
It could be the size of a quarter for all he knows. He has no information about this. And the reporter finds out about the boxer somehow. The boxer has this invitation, right?
Yeah.
And then Roger Moore then leads the team across the continent of Asia.
Yeah.
To this place. At no point did the boxer share the map until they got in a little fist fight or something. And he then gave it to him.
Yeah. They took this van. And then eventually the van gets stuck. So then it's like, oh, we'll switch to elephants.
Yep.
And then they get through elephants and then they cross through water and they're like, well, now we got to go by horse.
They're in the middle of Asia.
Right? In the middle of Asia. But it was like all of the fighters somehow landed in this like little inn.
Yep.
And the innkeeper was like, oh, the Americans, I knew you guys were coming. Like, how?
Yeah, I know, right? And
it's not like he telegraphed ahead. There's no power. There's no electricity. Yeah. There's no mail.
And so the whole plan that you find out later was that Jean-Claude knew he wasn't going to be able to win the Golden Dragon. So he brought along Roger Moore so that he could steal it. And then in return, I guess he wanted a trip to America somehow. Like that was the bargain.
Yeah.
Jean-Claude gets the dragon and JC gets to go home. But he thinks that Roger Moore is this grand schemer, right? Until you realize that Roger Moore's plan was just to fucking just walk out the door with this while they're all fighting.
Well, yeah. They literally walk by the dragon. He's like, that's a lot bigger than I thought it was.
Looks heavy.
I can't move it.
And so the German delegate arrived in a blimp. And so then the plan was he's going to just hook it up to the blimp and leave.
I mean, there's one point too. Right? So the boxer guy like hands his scroll to Jean-Claude and Jean-Claude is like, oh, I'm just going to act like I'm this guy, Devine. But then Devine shows up and is like, this guy is a better fighter than me, so I want him to take my spot. And the Emperor's like, what? Like,
it doesn't happen. Okay,
well, he's got to get through the first round, and then we'll decide. Otherwise, you're stuck here forever.
Yeah, the boxer. Nobody else. Like, nobody else from that party.
The boxer's stuck. Yeah, the boxer's stuck there forever because he's giving up his spot to Jean-Claude. And, you know, Jean-Claude makes it through, of course.
I mean, but at this point, Spenny, were you assuming that, because up until building up to the actual start of the fighting, was your assumption that this was a fight to the death in each case?
Absolutely.
Total blood sport type thing, right?
Yeah.
No, It's just kind of like they like fight until one of them passes out.
One fell over.
That's it.
No, just one time. So there's this big guy that was the Mongolian. He was like
the favorite. Literally looked like Steve Harvey. Did you?
Yeah.
Just straight up Steve Harvey.
He looked like our old band director. Just Kevin. As an ogre, like a big, yeah. It's a big ogre form. Didn't he?
I can see it now with the eyes for sure.
Yeah.
With Kevin's eyes and then Steve Harvey's like lower half of his face, the mustache and the teeth and stuff.
Totally. That sounds right.
That's awesome. So he ends up killing a guy by breaking his back over his knee, right?
Breaks his back. The guy, he breaks the back of the guy that from Muay Thai Island that was training Jean-Claude.
Yep.
That's the only person that gets hurt. Yeah, the rest of them just kind of get, just kind of get
shaken up. Okay, Spenny, did you notice that not every fighter, not every winner from the rounds, some fighters fought more than others. Did you notice that? Jean-Claude fought in three fights, and the Mongolian guy fought in like four or five fights.
I think they were. I think they were trying to just. I don't know. Not everybody got equal time. Yeah. So I think it was more just slices together.
Yeah. They didn't in any way think of a bracket type format.
All of a sudden it was like, it's the semifinals.
It's the semifinals. There's like a bunch more fights and stuff. And then at one point they're fighting and stuff. And then Jean-Claude is out in the town just kind of milling around and stuff. You think it's the next day or the night or something that they stopped. But at this point, the emperor said, all right, cool. We're going to let you in. But like you said, you have to fight you have to make it through the first round. And so there's like several full on fights. At this point, we're at 50 or 60 minutes into the runtime. And they just now start fighting, and they show every fucking fight, right? Every single bracket.
Just nonstop.
And
there's like no music over, no music over it. It's just grunts and groans.
Yep. And and so there's fighting. And then they take a scene break where Jean-Claude is just out kind of, it looks like he changed clothes even, where he's just like hanging out. And then it's another couple fights, and then he fights for the first round. Yep. And then they, I guess, break for the night or something. But no, they're still fighting. And that's the guys that just fought are fighting again. And but Jean-Claude doesn't. Jean-Claude skips an entire round of fighting. And
well, he proved it in the first round. Yep. So, but the thing that was so funny is Jean-Claude was always, every time he was watching someone fight, he just looked scared to death.
Yeah.
Like,
bro, like 7 months ago, I was putting clown makeup on my face and walking around on stilts. What am I doing here? I just want to go home.
Oh my god,
why did I think this was my ticket home? At this point, he couldn't be farther away from home.
Right, he literally just keeps getting further and further away
from his boys.
But there was so we talked about, so two of the fighters, one guy was from Africa. Whole continent.
But the country of Africa.
And then they had one from Okinawa because that's where karate. One of them is from Japan. I think it's karate. Is from Okinawa. So apparently Jean-Claude had some affinity to that. So that's why he wanted it specifically to be that. Because there was Japan and Okinawa.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. There are a lot of,
and then just Mongolia versus US final battle.
Yep.
Apparently you can fall out of the ring and then the fight keeps going.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
That was new for the final.
The round the ring just doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
It's just a convenient place for them to all look at the fight. Right?
Well, what didn't make sense is so the emperor is the one overseeing this entire tournament. He just kind of nods at them, and then the fight keeps going. But then they go out of this whole thing. Obviously, the emperor's not going anywhere. So there's the emperor just literally sitting inside this building. Yeah.
Waiting to find out. Like
bashing through houses and all this other stuff.
How does it... I mean, at no point during that fight is he in any way look like he can beat him, right? He just gets the crap kicked out of him the entire time.
Yeah, the choreography had to have been really hard because everybody was like, you know, different style, different size. Mm-hmm. Like it just seemed like there was no way to like, there was no good way that they were choreographing like a back and forth battle. It was either Mongolia was beating the crap out of Jean-Claude, or Jean-Claude at the end just started beating the crap out of Mongolia. And it was like, that doesn't feel like there was a back and forth at all. It was just one side. So,
one of the funny things I thought about Roger Moore was that, okay, they get captured, right? And they like have this death sentence for, I don't know, this fighting tournament thing. And Roger Moore is this pirate, right? He's cutthroat. He wins at all costs. He literally sold a man. And probably did it more often. And it's always him first. And when they get caught, he has this little speech with Jean-Claude. And he goes, you know what? I used to be a patriot, sailed for my country in World War I, and for what? You know, who was I to them and stuff? And so then it was me always. And so I always win. But you know what? Sometimes you lose. And then I guess he was just good with just staying there and dying or something. I don't know. He's like, he basically gave up. And, I don't know. And then, so they win, right? But true to his word, the golden dragon stays.
Dragon stays.
And
it just ends.
And then it ends. And he does this voiceover. Yeah, I made it back home. Me and the boys did all right. End. Until it cuts back to him as an old man sitting in the bar, which had literally nothing to do with any part of the movie. It wasn't relevant to where he was when he started.
They had to find some way to put the quest in this whole fucking movie. So they had him close that book, and it's called The Quest.
Turns out the reporter that came along wrote a book about the whole fucking thing and called it The Quest. Why was he an old man? Did the book just get published?
I don't know.
80 years later? I mean, what? What was the point of having a flashback? Of having the whole thing be a flashback?
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
Him returning to this bar, I guess in New York, you don't know where it is. This bar had nothing to do with him as a character or his story or him trying to get back to it. It wasn't in the first scene when he was on stilts. Are you from around here? I used to be. That could be anywhere now. I don't get it. Yeah. Like, what? I don't know. This was a Street Fighter movie. The movie last week was a Quest movie. And
got him switched.
They did an oopsie.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, Roger Moore, in his autobiography, stated that this was a very disorganized production that ran out of money and had poor preparation. And he says that it was his least favorite movie of his movie.
How many times have we watched movies with this?
These
exact comments. Is this another moron movie, right?
Yes.
I mean, I gotta say, this is clearly worse than Street Fighter, right? I mean, nothing about this was relevant to anything.
Part of me is like, this wasn't a good movie at all. But at the same time, like, just the elements that he was able to just throw together. Like, in what world can you have a guy dressed on stilts as a clown start the movie? A emperor from Tibet with all these people sending out the scrolls in English. The scrolls in English. All of them.
With just a random ass map on the back with a couple mountain squiggles and like a river.
Just in the middle, it says Shan. Whatever Shan is.
Oh, man.
And then Roger Moore. I mean, Roger Moore, he was funny.
Yeah, he was the star of the show, for sure.
His lines were terrible, but he had a perfect delivery for everything. Yeah.
He was a real gentleman, the whole thing, in terms of he held up the whole thing. He took it seriously, which speaks volumes to, like, why,
Yeah, consummate professional. Did I go over budget? So this was a $30 million budget and $57 million box office. So in today's numbers, $57 million budget, $110 million
Okay.
Box office. I had never even heard of this movie.
Nope.
Till it just stumbled upon after Street Fighter came on, and I was like, "The hell is this?" So.
Yeah.
Well. Should we do this?
Yeah.
This is the Ascension to 10 podcast. We do have to rate these on 11-point scale. Ascension being the worst thing you've ever seen, 10 the greatest thing you've ever seen. This is episode 42? 43.
I'm going to give this quest a 0.4.
Okay. What did I give? 0.87?
You gave 0.8 to Batman and Robin. 0.7 to Street Fighter.
Yeah, I'll give this a 0.35.
Usually you don't go lower than me. I'm impressed.
Yeah. Well, I never want to see it again. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. This was long. This was so long. Because
it wasn't a very long movie. It was only 1:35.
Oh, really? Time. Well, it felt long.
Felt very long. I've often wondered who would win, Jean-Claude Van Damme or Steven Seagal.
You know, Spenny, it's really funny that you should bring that up, because my pick for next week.
Oh, shoot. Shoot, what is it?
You got me feeling like we got to go back to some Seagal here just to stay on form. And so I found another movie called Code of Honor.
Does he have a goatee in this one?
Oh yeah, baby. Same exact coat that he had in what was the other one that we watched?
Code of Honor?
Born to Raise Hell was the other one. Code of Honor.
2016? This came out in 2016? Holy crap.
Okay. So that, I mean, maybe that once we finish that one, we'll take a break from action movies.
Okay.
But it's just so, I mean, so you set me up so perfect, man.
That's perfect. That's what we're here for.
We're just in sync at all times. Spenny got new glasses and we had no prior communication. They ended up being basically the same ones and we wore them on the same day.
Yeah. This is uncanny. Yep. Uncanny. It's just meant to be.
And you got to watch the pot. You got to watch these episodes on YouTube if you want to see that, of course.
Right. It's the Ascension to 10 podcast YouTube channel.
That's right.
And then you can also find us on socials, Ascension to 10 on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
That's right.
And then our website, ascensiontoten.com. And then if you ever have recommendations or if you personally have a typical day, you can always email us at boys@ascensiontoten.com.
Yep. We want to hear from you.
We do. We would love. We like picking movies, but it's more entertaining when we get people to send us ones. So we don't have to think about that part.
Well, the last recommendation we got was Cosmo Ball, which ended up being surprising.
We actually both liked that one. Yeah, that was a good one. I think we might have another one. Maybe we can do that in a couple of weeks. I think there's another one that we got
excellent
in between. So
excellent.
Well, as always, he's Jad. I'm Spenny.
Bye.
Welcome to Ascension to 10.